This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lin Chuang and Xiaoning. It's 7:18 in the morning, and the overall numbers of tourists arriving in Malaysia rose 2.7% to 6.7 million in the first quarter of this year. However, tourists from Saudi Arabia dropped just over 20% on year to some 17,000 during this period. And this is despite the fact that Malaysia is supposedly a favourite destination for visitors from the Middle East and is a major contributor to the country's tourism industry.
Can I just say that annualised, that's only 26.8 million visitors. That's not a great deal. I think 10 years ago, we were only doing about 22. So we haven't done a lot in terms of attracting more
compared
tourists.
Compared to Thailand, for example, 100 million, I think they have tourists.
I think more people go to Koh Samui than they come to Malaysia. Just joking.
What I hope, and I'm not sure about these numbers, but a quite significant number of them are actually just day trippers from Singapore driving in from Johor Bahru.
Yeah, so I don't
think... So if you strip that out, you know, the question is really how many tourists are arriving. And it's also the spend of the tourists when they're here.
It's much
lower than Singapore and Thailand.
Yeah, I mean, for example, if James Dyson chooses to put his $1 billion into Singapore's economy, the kind of people that go to Singapore are very different from the kind of people that come to Malaysia, right? We get tier two, tier three people. We want to change that. We should change that.
And but guys, you know, we are coming from a time when Malaysia used to be, you know, Malaysia truly Asia. We used to have a lot of Visit Malaysia year used to be a big thing. Tourism Malaysia was a big name overseas. And it's interesting to see that this seems to have tapered off, or in the intervening time, the tourism arrivals haven't really grown all that significantly. Perhaps it's a factor of competition as well, because, you know, places like Indonesia, Vietnam, they've been aggressively promoting their destinations all over the world, and particularly also in the Middle East.
I think that's a strategy thing. I think Singapore really have a lot of good people thinking behind their narrative, right? I mean, if you, for example, you go and court Michelin and get some of their stars, that instantly your street food gets onto Netflix. Not instantly, but do you know what I mean, right? Mm-hmm. There's some thinking behind that.
Chuang, the whole Crazy Rich Asian was one big Singaporean tourism advertisement, although half of the locations were Malaysian.
Right. So, I mean, where's the thinking behind that? But I think the Malaysian Reserve goes with the fact that there's been some decline from the Middle East. I think Saudi visitors dropped some 200,000 to just 17,000 during this period. And, we wring our hands in disdain as to why is it that we're getting less from that part of the world. Well, is it possibly because the narrative from, say, a Thailand or a Singapore is that much more... thought out than Malaysians?
But there's a little glimmer
of hope. Yeah.
Because we do see the arrival of Air Arabia, right? That's the first and largest low-cost carrier from the Middle East. They're going to provide a critical link between KL and Sharjah, which is the UAE. And this airline actually flies 155 routes across the globe. So maybe we will see the arrival of more Middle Eastern tourists in the next few months.
That oil money is very attractive. They come out here, and it's a bit like, it's directly proportionate to oil prices, right? There's a direct correlation.
There is, right? Yes, there is.
I mean, look at Harrods. Half the footfall in Harrods are the Middle Eastern visitors.
Firstly, it's owned by the Qataris.
Okay, exactly, right. Is it Khashoggi? Was it Khashoggi?
Once upon a time, but now it's the Qataris. The Qatari sovereign fund.
Who also own Manchester City, for example, exactly. And Paris Saint-Germain, the football club. They got a lot of dollars in their coffers.
Yeah, it's quite interesting to see how the aviation industry has shifted from, you know, the automatic association is US and Europe. Now you really see the aviation powers basically being in the Middle East, you know, Qatar, UAE. But back home as well, Malaysia Airports Holdings, they've reported some numbers, and they registered a 7.3% on-year growth in passenger volumes in June of 2019 to 12.1 million. That's the second highest since December of last year, partly though spurred by a higher demand in air travel due to the Eid al-Fitri as well as the summer holidays.
Yeah, of course, chuti-chuti Malaysia, when times are a bit more royally outside, you travel within the country. So that's obviously helped by the summer holidays as well as the Eid al-Fitri holidays. So according to the stories, Malaysia airports are positive on achieving their targeted growth for this year, supported by the domestic sector, which is a good thing, right? Obviously,
yes. Mm-hmm.
You don't have to rely on externalities.
In a way, it's probably more consistent.
Yep.
Yeah, although if I'm not wrong, the fee revenue is lower for domestic tourists because of the passengers' service charges are lower.
Yeah. So, I mean, for example, would you drive to Langkawi or would you fly to Langkawi, right? It's about the same. In fact, it's quite cheap to fly to Langkawi if you buy it right.
Yes, it is.
Right. Isn't it also a bit inconvenient to try and drive to Langkawi because then you have to take a ferry?
Correct.
But then, you know, Koh Siu Chuang would say that it's part of the fun, right?
It's not how you get there, it's how you get there, right?
Now, MAHB's passenger movements grew 4.4% in the first half of this year to just under 68 million. International passenger movements up 8.3% to 5.6 million, while domestic passenger movements grew 6.5% to 6.5 million. KLIA's passenger movements recorded a growth of 4.6% with a significant growth in domestic sectors. So that was up 7.4% to 1.6 million passenger movements.
I like that number. International passenger movements up within the first 6 months of this year by 8%. So, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Xiaoning, but is there a direct correlation in turn between economic activity and business activity to international passenger movements?
Definitely.
Right? Mm-hmm. There would be, right?
Yes. Obviously. I mean, if you rewind back to 2008 during the financial crisis, right, you did see actually...
A complete fall off, right?
Yes, a complete... And it's very fast. This number comes down very quickly. It changes consumer behavior overnight. If you think you're going in a recession, the last thing you're going to do is go on holiday,
which
right?
is discretionary.
Yes. Yeah, it's completely discretionary.
But, when we were talking about MAHB too, there has been a report by Moody's Investor Service basically warning that MAHB may be more exposed to an expansion risk this exposure could increase over the next year if it takes on more responsibilities under a new concession agreement with the government. Now, currently, they're not directly exposed to expansion risk because the Malaysian government retains primary responsibility for developing a new airport capacity.
Yeah, I think because the government takes on the balance sheet encumbrance, right, obviously. But if under this new tariff framework, airports takes it on themselves onto their own balance sheet, then obviously Moody's got a leg to stand on. But there's a lot more to this concession agreement than just infrastructure liability, right? Because you've also got more in terms of yield on your concession agreement, and I think your internal rate of return, right?
Yes. I mean, this is part of the regulator asset backed, which is actually now going through MAVCOM, right? It hasn't been completely finalized in terms of the final workings of how much should you be paid for CAPEX expansion.
Correct. What was the range we were discussing some weeks ago? It was actually quite generous.
It was between, if I'm not wrong, 9 to 11%
for 11%.
The weighted average cost of capital, which is high.
When your blended loan interest encumbrance is around about 6%,
yeah,
right?
It would be much lower. But of course, in a way, the government wants to encourage private enterprise to take on CAPEX, right? As we know, we are trying to cut down expenditure at all levels, right? So maybe the government thinks, hey, this is a good model. And it's not a bad model. It's a model that you see used in a lot of countries, like in New Zealand, US, and even UK, where it's private companies running and also expanding the airports.
And it's not as if you're going to build another KLA, right? Because most of the airports are already built. So you're just refurbing and renovating, adding capacities, adding runways. So you're not going to look at another $5 billion new airport because it's already built.
Speaking of cutting costs, though, we can't talk about the aviation industry without also talking about Malaysia Airlines, because they are in the news this morning because Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, he's laid down two conditions for parties interested in taking over Malaysian Airlines. So speaking to reporters in Parliament, he said the first condition is to preserve Malaysia Airlines' national identity, and the second is that any takeover proposal should not involve the sacking of staff. And I think that is going to be two fairly difficult conditions to fulfill, right? Because one of the major problems with Malaysia Airlines is that it has got hugely bloated staff costs.
Well, notwithstanding these two conditions being, if you actually do contravene them, there would be a bit of a political hot potato, because the thin ice that Pakatan is right now on is not something that you want to be tampering with. But I mean, generally, be that as it may, I think the government is looking at three options, as I understand it, right? Obviously, Japan Airlines, the model there is one option, as I understand it, which is bankruptcy, and then you get a clean slate to move on.
You get time and room to renegotiate with your debtors.
And all your contracts are then rescinded, only to be restarted on a clean slate. But that's not politically feasible, as this suggests. The second is obviously a sellout, right, of a minority stake, not majority, to another carrier. Mm-hmm. And I think intuitively, the Middle Eastern carriers, the Emirates of this world, the Qatars of this world, would be a potential destination, being fellow Islamic countries. And then you also open up the very highly profitable Hajj route, yeah, which is obviously something which really exists under the One World Alliance that Malaysia Airlines operates under.
Tun Nam did say that the government might be willing to give up their majority stake in Malaysia Airlines, though. But giving up that majority stake doesn't mean necessarily giving up a say, because he has said that Putrajaya will ensure it does have a voice in anything to do with Malaysia Airlines. And I think...
You can still retain management control.
Yeah, you can. So like a golden shareholding system, right?
Or you could do like the Proton Geely model, right? Mm. Which is whereby Proton DRB still has 51% stake and 49% is Geely, but Geely runs the Proton factory.
Yeah, they put their CEO, they got CEO rights, right?
Yes, but ultimately the control is still in the hands of the Malaysians.
Yeah.
So perhaps that model is something that we can consider. But the one thing I have to say is if you can't cut staff, are your hands already tied before you begin? Because that would mean cost.
Have you read Richard Branson's Losing My Virginity? I did, right? No, seriously, it's a real book, okay? So back in the day when he was just running Virgin in his infancy, they were trying to address the losses, so he just expended his way out of trouble. Malaysia Airlines can do the same thing.
However, the Prime Minister has said there's no time limit for the government to make a decision, so they've still got a little ways to go before they decide on the fate of Malaysia Airlines. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.